The Albany Symphony Orchestra is proud to feature Schumann's Symphony No. 3 this Saturday, October 19th at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall at 7:30 and Sunday, October 20th at 3 p.m. The concert, filled with delightful works by Ravel, Faure, and Aaron J. Kernis, is sure to leave a lasting impression on you, as will their maestro, the one, the only, David Allen Miller, who's here to tell us more about it. Good morning.
Hi, Joe. How nice to see you.
It's good to see you. You're all spiffy today. Dressed up in tie.
I got a lunch date, so I had to dress up and wear a tie and everything.
And be all professional and
stuff.
Yeah,
I know. I'd much rather be in my dungarees, but so it is. I'll be in my dungarees later for the rehearsals. We have two rehearsals this afternoon and evening.
Rehearsals and getting ready for the big show, of course. The shows, both Saturday and Sunday at the gorgeous Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, and this is a very eclectic program.
It is. I was trying to link the different elements in preparation for talking to you, and I think I can. I think it probably
link
starts.
Away.
It probably starts with Aaron J. Kernis, who, as you know, probably is a wonderful mid-career American composer who's had a very illustrious career.
You had a great interview with him last week.
Thank you for airing that. Yeah,
hearing it.
And he's a beautiful composer and has had a close relationship with the Minnesota Orchestra and the Philadelphia Orchestra and various other places, teaches at Yale, and he has this incredible piano concerto, which isn't exactly brand new, but it's basically brand new. It's the world premiere of the piano concerto, which is actually subtitled Three Flavors for Piano and Orchestra. But it's not brand new because it existed in an earlier form. It was originally a toy piano concerto written in 2002. And I was actually going to bring my wrecked up toy piano from my children's early life and play some of it on it for you, but I thought that was maybe a little too much to lay on your listeners. Because, as you know, for those of you who know the toy piano, you know that it's not the most beautiful sounding thing. And I think what Aaron found with this earlier piece is that it wasn't that successful, mainly from a balance perspective. So what he's done is he's completely recast it, and it's a fabulous three-movement piece. And he calls it Three Flavors because it's three very different movements. The first one's about gamelan. The second one is a beautiful lullaby to his babies that were in vitro, that were in utero at the time. And the last movement is a very jazzy thing called Blue Whirl. And so I wanted to build the concert from that. So Aaron is very much influenced by French music and is a huge Ravel lover. So I decided to put the beautiful Pavane by Ravel for a dead princess. And as Ravel liked to say about it, because most people played it too slowly, it's not a dead Pavane for a princess. It's a Pavane for a dead princess. Very important delineation. And then I wanted to also put a beautiful piece that most people don't know by Ravel's teacher, beloved teacher, Gabriel Fauré, who arguably is maybe the father of modern French music, of the Impressionists, Pelléas et Mélisande, a beautiful little 17-minute suite.
Now you're just showing
and
off.
Then I wanted to do a beautiful piece of romantic music, so the Schumann Rhenish. And so it's a very French-influenced concert, and Ned Roram, the very senior American composer, has written extensively, and he's always saying that there's French. The world can be divided into two things, French and German. And he says, Debussy is French, Berlioz is German. But of course, we know Berlioz is French, but he means like Berlioz because his aesthetic is more Germanic. Well, Schumann, even though he's German, you know, being a great early romantic, is really as French, as sensual, as rich, as beautiful as any Frenchman might be.
Where is the composer in all this?
Will Aaron
be on site?
Oh, he will be. He will be. In fact, he'll be on site in a couple of hours because he's going to come to all the rehearsals. And
okay, so what's that like?
I mean, you don't
have Ravel or Schumann, you know, screwing around with things.
It's like flying with a co-pilot, which is always a very good thing to do, right? So the wonderful thing about all my work with living composers is, as my wife Andrea would tell you, early in my career when I started doing a lot of new music and working with living composers regularly, weekly, I began to converse with dead composers as well. The thing is that when you really get to know living composers, you have a lot more questions to ask the dead ones. So I find that I have a lot of very fruitful conversations with dead people like Schumann and Faure and such, and I ask them the same kind of questions in my head that I would ask Aaron live, but it's nice to have them alive, actually.
occasionally alive. Makes the conversations easier, I would think. But in the questions, is it your influence, what your thought process is that's influencing the answers, or do you think it's experience with their particular music and how much of it history plays into it? There's quite a stew there.
It's very much immersing yourself in the world of the composer. And that's what I love about someone like Schumann, because to understand Schumann, you have to understand his whole oeuvre. You have to understand all of his piano pieces and his songs, and you have to understand his relationship with Clara and his madness. And you know, this was a piece that was written very late in his career. It's one of his most beautiful and successful pieces, the Rhenish Symphony in 1850, just 4 years before his final illness and dying in an insane asylum. And it's a beautiful, incredibly powerful piece about the Rhineland, about the mighty Rhine River. In fact, I have this, I know we're a little pressed for time, but I want to just read you this beautiful quote from him that he said in 1829. He said, I closed my eyes, this was his first view of the Rhine, I guess, I closed my eyes in order to enjoy the first views of the majestic old Father Rhine with the whole of my fasting soul. And when I opened them, it lay before me, quiet, still, earnest and proud, like an old German god. Bum, 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 ba-da-da-dum, da-da-dum. So, I mean, it's just, you can feel that in the music, that his love for the Rhine and the power of it and what it represented. So I try to immerse myself deeply in the world of the composer and the work and the time. And with living composers, it's nice, because last week I was in the city and I took the train up to Washington Heights and sat in Aaron's living room and he played through the piano concerto for me. So it's more convenient with living composers. You have to do a little more work with dead ones, but it's fun. It's fun either way. It's fun both ways.
Do you understand, and this is going to seem like a flip question, and I don't mean it to be that way. And I'm taking it seriously, so just so you know my background here. But and that is, you know, when you talk about Schumann of this ending in mental illness, do you understand why so many the stories we hear of so many of the great composers ended this way? Ended
well, or
poorly.
Great creative artists.
I mean,
there are a lot of theories, as you know as well as I, of you know, that you have to be a little mad, whatever that means, to be a creative artist. I'd like to think that's not true, because there certainly were some who seemed rather well balanced. But you're right that there certainly were many who seemed emotionally to go through very challenging times. Schumann is a pretty extreme example, because I don't think most composers ended their lives in madness. I think it's a pretty select few.
So do you see that? Do you see that in working with the live composers?
Oh, just some of them. Some of them are a little emotionally unstable. But, you know, anybody who would eschew a lovely career in accounting or dentistry and instead become a composer or a violinist would have to be a little imbalanced, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, well, I just, you hear all these very dramatic stories of the great composers. And I'm wondering, you know, are we a little more centered now? Are we a little more grounded where people, because it is accepted and the work comes, sure. There can be eccentricities. Yes, I understand that. But there's less of the total immersion into madness.
Well, interestingly, a lot of the best composers I know, well, Aaron happens to have gotten married and he has two children, but a lot of the best composers I know don't have families. And I think maybe that's because it's so demanding, the creative work and the flexibility and the staying up all night when you have an idea you're working with. I also think that that creativity is a very special trait. I've become really struck by this. All of my children are creative, but one of my three children is creative off the chart. He's a songwriter and a filmmaker, and he's a little guy. He's 13. But when I watch somebody like that, and when I watch some of these composers, the ones I love, who are the most creative ones, I'm struck at how uniquely different they are from us regular people. And I don't mean that everybody can't be in touch with his or her own creativity, because I'm a big believer in that. But when you come in touch with someone who's really creative, like an Aaron Kernis, you see that they have certain kind of internal drives that most of us don't have.
I know it's always special when you're at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, because it's such a beautiful place.
It is, and be able to do this program in Troy, because it's such a beautiful kind of... Aaron's piece has a huge amount of percussion, because there was all this percussion playing along with the toy piano when it was a toy piano concerto. So it's a very percussion-laden piece, and it's hard to fit on the stage. But the concert is pretty intimate in that the Schumann is not a big loud thing, and it was probably designed by Schumann for about a 45 or 50-member orchestra, which is about how we're playing it. And the Ravel and the Fauré are very intimate. We're also doing a little tribute to our beloved, recently departed friend Carl Tui, longtime board chair of the Albany Symphony, who died at the age of, I think, 95 a few months ago. So we're doing a little extra special piece in his memory and in his honor. So it should be a very intimate, very beautiful concert, and just the kind of repertoire that works perfectly in that great hall, which is one of the greatest halls in the world.
Absolutely. And then you're off.
Oh, is there more? I was worried.
No. But I mean, you have this one, and then you'll have another show
in November, and then we're on to the magic of Christmas, and we have a beautiful Baroque program in December, and lots more going on all through the year.
And people can still do different subscription things and figure all that stuff out.
In fact, we still have an 8-concert package as of today, so we'd love you to come, and then you get Andre Watts for absolutely free. So you can find out all about that at our website, www.albanysymphony.com. We'd love to have you visit us there.
I remember a time when I didn't know that.
And what? Visit us at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall either Saturday, or Saturday's getting pretty limited in terms of tickets. We have the Sunday afternoon now, 3:00, also in the Music Hall, and that's a beautiful time to come hear a concert. So either of those, we'd love to have everybody with us.
Perfect day. It's Saturday, October 19th at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall at 7:30, or at the hall on Sunday at 3:00. And you can find out more information, as David mentioned, by going to AlbanySymphony.com. David Alan Miller, it's always great. Go have lunch.
Thank you, Joe. I will. And then I can take my tie off.
Good. You can take your tie off, get into those dungarees, and have a great time. Always good to see you. Thank you.
Good to see you, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.